What's going on, man?
Hello, George Chappell. How are you today?
I'm just great. How are you, Keith Stone?
Good. This is the most highly anticipated episode of Keith, George and Keith's Musings, I believe, in the history of podcasting.
Well,
worldwide.
Oh, yeah. Burning up the internet.
Yep. So today we're going to talk about the top 10 Seinfeld episodes of all time. But to make even more anticipation for the audience, we're only going to do 6 through 10 today, and top 5 in the next podcast, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
This one is going to have so much discussion on each of these episodes. I really anticipated this one. I had like 27 different nominations for the top 10, and I just have a feeling that we're going to have, I don't think we're going to have a lot of crossovers on this one, so I think it's going to warrant a lot more discussion.
Well, there were 180 episodes, if you count the two-parters, you know, as like separate, so a two-parter would be two episodes. There were 180 episodes over 9 seasons, so I think we're going to do pretty good.
I think.
And after I did my list, just for kicks, I looked through like other people's top tens, and I was amazed, like how much different they were than mine. So yeah, I think we should be in pretty good shape here.
This will be a good one. I've got the top 10, but I have a whole list of honorable mentions that I wouldn't be surprised if you hit some of those. So. Looking forward to this one.
Okay. Well, then I guess I'll let you go first. What is your 10th favorite all-time Seinfeld episode? Explain a little bit to me about it.
Well,
and what made it your number 10?
Well, it just happens. I watched this one fairly recently. Got reacquainted with it, and it really was just kind of an out-there episode. It's from season 9. And it's something that I think you talked about in one of our other podcasts. You referenced it, I think, in the one where Andy came a guest appearance. But my number 10 is the Merv Griffin Show. This is the episode from season 9 where Kramer and Jerry are walking down the street, and Kramer finds the remnants of the old Merv Griffin set in a dumpster. And he decides to take the whole thing, move it up, and set it up in his apartment. And whenever anyone would come into his apartment, he would greet them as if he was Merv Griffin. One of the interesting things about this episode is one of the very few episodes that you never see the inside of Jerry's apartment. All of the interior apartment shots are done in Kramer's apartment on the Merv Griffin set.
I did not know that piece.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. There's a couple of interesting sides things going on as well. By season 9, they on all the episodes, each character kind of had their own storyline in each episode. And also in the Merv Griffin Show, Jerry's storyline was that he had a girlfriend who had a bunch of toys that her dad left her. They're all these antique toys that were still in the boxes, and she wouldn't let Jerry play with them. And so all Jerry wanted to do was play with her toys. And what was really frustrating him, George would ask him, well, what, you're not having sex? He said, oh yeah, the sex is fine, but she won't let me play with her toys. So he concocts this scheme to drug her. He brings over a turkey and a bunch of wine. So she passes out, and then he can play with all of her toys. Well, how this ties into the Merv Griffin Show is that Jerry lets slip when he's talking to Kramer that he basically drugged his girlfriend so he could play with her toys. And then Kramer basically outed him because he had his girlfriend in the back of the in the backstage, so
right. And the reason was Kramer had brought Newman on as a sidekick,
right?
And he said He said the show is dying. We need to change the format. So they went to that gotcha format.
Yep.
And that's why he brought her, brought the girlfriend out.
Right. It was kind of like Merv Griffin. They turned Merv Griffin into what was that guy, the Jerry, what the hell was that guy's name?
Jerry Springer?
Jerry, yeah, they turned Merv Griffin into like the Jerry Springer show.
Former mayor of Cincinnati.
Correct.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's my number 10. I think we had a fairly robust discussion on that one. So what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are you'll be hearing more about that episode, but possibly not until the next session.
Wow, okay.
I love that one. Okay, my number 10. Now, this is funny. So Seinfeld lasted 9 seasons. You just cited a season number 9 as one of your favorite. This one is also from season number 9. I don't know why these guys stopped the show, because it was still good. It was still very good. Larry David had left the show after season 7, but it wasn't like there was no controversy. He was just so stressed. He always thought the show stunk, and he just couldn't take it anymore, so he left. So,
right.
Here because we are citing all these shows from episode 9. So the one I chose is called The Bookstore. And there's two big things that happens. The three big things. I like to talk about how everybody does it. The reason it's called The Bookstore is that George takes a book into the bathroom at the bookstore, and when he tries to go sneak back out and put it on the shelf, the guy caught him, says, "You can't do that, it's been in the bathroom." Yeah. And he says, "Yeah, okay, like what am I supposed to do? You know, you feed his bran muffins and coffee, and I can't take a book into the bathroom." So he doesn't think it's a big deal, so he goes to the register and tries to turn it, and they say, "No, this book is flagged." And he goes to every chain of that bookstore in the city, and nobody will take it. It's been flagged as a bathroom book. He even takes it to try and donate it to Rebecca De Mornay, who showed up in another episode when Elaine was trying to get rid of the muffin tops.
But
the muffin bottoms. But anyway, so she also knew it was flagged. So George was all bent out of shape that he laid out $100 for the book, and he was about to sell it to Elaine when Jerry came out and says, "What is that book doing on the table?" And they're in the bookstore, in the diner. And so that ruined George's plan to get rid of it. But then the two other parts of that story was Uncle Leo was shoplifting, and Jerry called him on it the first time, and he goes, "Everybody does it." He goes, "What are they going to do?" I go, "I'm an old man. I'm confused." And so Jerry calls his parents to tell him about Uncle Leo, and they say, "Well, yeah, we all do it. We all shoplift. We haven't bought batteries in 20 years or whatever." So Jerry just can't believe what he's hearing. But then the other big part, I mean, I love it when, and it seems like, with the exception of just a couple of episodes, which we'll probably talk about like as an afterthought, everybody's got a story. Everybody's got their own little piece of the show.
Yep.
And this one, Kramer and Newman start a rickshaw business, and they, Jerry's asking them questions like about it, as if they thought it through, like, "Well, who's going to pull it?" And they're going, and they kind of both look at each other like, "Oh, I figured you would." And so they decided they're going to have a homeless person pull it. And so sure enough, they have these three candidates out there. And one of them just freaks out and leaves. The other one is all ragtag. And so one person steps up and says, "Okay, take it down the street and back. Let's see how you do." And he takes off, and he never came back. And he just stole their rickshaw. And they eventually did get it back. But so that, and then Elaine's piece of that was that she had, she was a, it was the Peterman Christmas party, and she was making out with a guy, and she had to pretend that they were dating so she could be avoid being called the office skank. So that went to a whole other thing. But yeah, I love that episode. Obviously, it's my number 10, and that's a long explanation, but there's a lot going on there.
Well, you know what's funny is that, this was all 20 some years ago when these were coming out. And you know, right now, if you came out with a show and you started making fun of homeless people and started talking about office skanks and things, you'd get vilified. There was so much of what that Jerry did that was not, of the PC world that we seem to be in today.
You're right, but they definitely wouldn't be on NBC. Now, there's still shows like that that might be on FX or
right.
stuff you don't normally see. But, yeah, you're right. The things they did and probably other things we'll get into would not, were kind of shocking at the time, but they really didn't get much flack for it.
So, and I think by season 9, they were pretty pretty bulletproof. I think they could really kind of do anything anyway.
Absolutely. They kind of owned NBC at that point.
Cool. So, and looking at it, I'm glad we decided to break this up into a two-part because, yeah, I think this is really hit our wheelhouse here.
Yep. A lot to say.
Yeah.
And I hope if you're listening, you like Seinfeld because we sure do. And the minutia is what, makes that party so great.
Absolutely.
Okay, you got number 9.
Okay, so going on, my number 9, I'm going to season 6 for this one. This was shortly after the whole Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding eruption came out, their whole battle on the Olympic scene. And this was an episode where that Seinfeld kind of spoofed that one, and it's called The Understudy. In the Understudy, I think George is dating someone who's an understudy to Bette Midler, and
yep.
on Broadway. And actually, the name of the show is Rochelle the Musical, which is a movie that they spoofed a lot on Seinfeld.
Yep.
But then when they're playing softball, George and Jerry's softball team are playing like the cast from Rochelle the Musical. And George takes out Bette Midler, I think a collision at home plate. And so that sidelines Bette Midler. And then the understudy, I think her name was Janice, the understudy got the part. I really like the spoof of the whole Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding thing. It was very topical from that standpoint. But one of my favorite parts of this whole thing is the understudy is eating a hot dog in the park, and she drops it, and she starts crying, kind of like Tonya Harding, and she's kind of like lamenting her Frankfurt. She keeps saying, My Frankfurter fell. It was really good. I can't believe I dropped it. And she's like boo-hooing. And Jerry's trying to console her. It's okay. It's just a hot dog. Everything is going to be okay. And she says, no, it was really good. And but there's
yeah, like when Tonya broke her shoelace, right?
Right. And that was another thing they did at the end of that show when she goes on stage and she breaks her shoelace and she wants to start again, which is what Tonya Harding did when she was skating, I think, at the Olympics. And she broke her shoelace. And wanted to restart, so they just tied so much into that whole Harding scandal. But it's another one of those things where Seinfeld kind of follows you your whole life. Is like, if I'm eating a hot dog now, I always just kind of think of it's my I keep thinking that it's my Frankfurter. So I always go back to the episode, and if I drop it, then I'm going to start crying about that I dropped my Frankfurter.
Excellent. Okay, my number 9 is again from season 9. So what the heck are they doing? Why are they stopping? But it's called The Strike. And the reason it's called The Strike is that Kramer gets the call that he's going to return to work. His strike demands from 12 years ago have finally been met.
Okay.
They demanded a raise of a pay raise to at least $5.35.
Yeah.
And what happened was that minimum wage got bumped to that. So
right.
He went back, and then and nobody even knew he ever worked there. But that's not even close to being the best part. The strike, I'll build up to it. First of all, George gets a Christmas gift, and it's like one of those, you know, a donation has been made in your name to,
yeah.
you know, the American Cancer Society.
Right.
So George thinks that, hey, that's a pretty good scam. So he, everybody at his work is he creates the Human Fund.
Human Fund.
So he gives everybody cards saying that, you know, your a donation has been given in your name to the Human Fund. And this is when he's working for Kruger Smoothing or something like that.
Yeah.
And the boss is inept.
Yeah,
and
industrial smoothing.
Yeah, industrial smoothing. And his boss calls him in the office and says, well, I want to talk about this Human Fund. So George thinks he's busted. He says, Corbett says I have to give some money to a charity, so I figure this is as good as any. So he gives him a check for $20,000 to the Human Fund. So George doesn't know what to do with that. But that's nothing. The biggest part of the strike is the introduction of Festivus.
Oh,
Festivus for the rest of us. This is what the Costanzas used to celebrate because Frank hated the commercialism of Christmas. So what Festivus consisted of was instead of a tree and an aluminum pole, and there were three things that you would do. First, you'd tell your family how they have disappointed you, and there were airing of grievances, and then finally the feats of strength. So that was Festivus, and I think it came up in a couple more episodes, but that was their saying was Festivus for the rest of us.
That is an absolute classic. You're right. I mean, it's another one of those, and it's one of those things where Seinfeld has created an actual community that celebrates Festivus, and it just shows the you know the strength of that show.
Yep. Oh. I mean, and to think that wasn't even when they wrote it wasn't even the main
right.
piece, but
it wasn't the
that's what took over.
You think the title would have been the Festivus or something, but yeah,
correct.
That I mean that's testament to what a strong character Frank was. Frank is definitely one of my favorite, you know, of all the non main four characters, all the supporting characters, he's way up there. He's awesome.
Absolutely. That sounds like a future episode sometimes, the outlying characters and who we like the best.
The best outlying character. Yeah, absolutely. Because there's another
easy one to do. Okay, what's your for number eight, Georgie?
My number eight, I'm going to season seven. This is a two-parter, so I'm including both of them. It's the part one
yep.
and part two. This movie actually has it. Michigan plays pretty big into this one, and it's the Bottle Deposit. Bottle Deposit is the one where Kramer and Newman hatch a scheme to take all these 5 cent cans that they get in New York and take them to Michigan where they can cash them in for 10 cents. And it has this great interaction between Newman and Kramer where Newman says, you know, what is it with this Michigan 10 cents? What does that mean? Kramer says, well, that's Michigan. In Michigan, you get 10 cents. 10 cents? Kramer says, yeah. So Newman says, wait a minute. You mean to get 5 cents here, 10 cents there? You could round up bottles here and run them out to Michigan for the difference. And, you know, so Kramer starts telling him that, no, it doesn't work. He's already been through it all. And Kramer says, yeah, you know, you overload your inventory, you blow your margins on gasoline, it doesn't work. So then Newman comes up with the idea that they can all, Mother's Day weekend's coming up, which is their biggest, you know, male holiday. So they got a lot of extra trucks going to Michigan. So they're going to load up this mail truck and take it and take it to like a big mail depository thing in Saginaw.
Where they're it is return. In Saginaw. Yep, to be more specific. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So you know, so that was a great Kramer and Newman scheme. One of the really funny things about that is that when they're traveling through, I think, Ohio, they get lost and they kind of get off on this back road, and they get in there, see that they go to this farm in Ohio, and the farmer is actually is Rance Howard, who is Ron Howard's father.
I did not know that.
Yep. The farmer is Rance Howard, and you know, and Newman kind of gets lost, and he goes up to this house, and you know, Rance Howard kind of welcomes him in and gives him something to eat. But it turns out that Rance Howard's daughter is the classic beautiful farmer's daughter. You know, that is just really smitten with this, you know, Newman character, like a kind of like a traveling salesman, but this, you know, this guy just passing through, and so, you know, Newman kind of makes a move on her, and she falls in love with him, and then Rance Howard gets a shotgun and starts shooting at Newman as he goes running off through the corn. And one of the funniest things in there is that the beautiful daughter, you know, comes to the door, and what she says is, "Goodbye, Norman." And she called him Norman instead of Newman. Well, that wasn't scripted. It was in the scripted. She was supposed to say goodbye Newman, but she blew the line and she said goodbye Norman. And the director liked it so much, and Jerry liked it so much, they just kept it in. They thought it was a way better finish than for her to call him Newman.
Outstanding.
So
I like it.
Yeah. So that was always there. Was few great moments in that one. That was also the one, I think, where Elaine had, or Jay Peterman wanted Elaine to go bid on John F. Kennedy's golf clubs, and she ended up like way overbidding. Like she bet, he told her she could go up to like $10,000. I think she went up to $20,000.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd leave that out so I could have something to talk about in our next episode.
Oh, stealing thunder again.
Yep. But it's okay. I'm surprised we're doing this so many. But anyways, my number 8 is called The Little Kicks. And this is when we first see Elaine dancing.
That's
and it's at the Peterman Christmas party. And she loses everybody's respect at work. They're all making fun of her. And I think we see her dance a couple more times. But everybody's aware of that when they're describing it. And they're telling the story, and Jerry says, "Oh, she didn't dance, did she?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." So that was the main part of that show. But another part that was kind of funny was that Kramer and Jerry went to a movie. And he said, "Oh, my buddy," Kramer says, "my buddy's coming along." And during the movie, he whips out a camera, and he's filming it. And
yep.
Jerry says, "What's going on here?" And Craig, "Oh, yeah, he bootlegs movies all the time." And he goes, "You can't do that. That's illegal." Well, during the movie, the guy eats so much candy, he gets the stomach ache. So he hands it off to Jerry to finish it. And reluctantly, Jerry does it. And when the bootlegger sees the finished work, says he is so impressed because he's never seen such great cinematography before. and people on the streets are talking about, you know, how great a job that movie
is.
That's why they should buy it. It was so well done. So Jerry kind of gets a big head about it, and he does other movies for the guy. And one time they're walking out of the theater, Jerry and Kramer, and the bootlegger says, "You got the tape for me?" He goes, "Oh no, we're just location scouting right now." He says, I need three cameras, you know, on each side, stuff like that. And he's just going way overboard.
Yeah.
But Jerry is into it. But what happens is after they tell Elaine about how bad her dancing is, she doesn't really believe it. So she tapes over one of Jerry's bootleg tapes that he hasn't yet delivered, and they show her dancing, and that becomes also famous too. Like, she'll be walking down the street, and all these people have seen the bootleg tape,
yeah,
are all pointing at her and pretending to dance like her and all that kind of stuff.
I think one of the movies that they bootlegged too was called Cry Cry Again.
It could have been one, yeah. And the first one was something like some big explosion.
Yeah.
They're missing it because they're out there talking about they didn't want a bootleg.
Yeah, I think it was a Hindenburg. But, well, I think what happened is what they taped over, like, Cry Cry Again, I think, with Elaine's Little Kicks, right?
And yes.
Then Jerry said, well, they call it Cry Cry Again because first you cry, then you watch her dancing, and then you cry again.
There you go. There you go. Another little piece of that movie is that there's a girl at work, at Elaine's work, and she's telling her how George is a bad seed, and you should not, do not talk to him. You don't ever go out with him or anything. So, of course, that appeals to her. She wants to date a bad boy, and so she does, and Elaine catches him dating, and like a teacher, like as if it was her daughter, hauls her away by the ear.
Yep.
Says, "You stay away from her." And then they finally they get into a big fight, and they end up at the police station. And it's an homage to like the Ferris Bueller part, where Ferris's sister, and then I think it was it Emilio Estevez,
the Charlie,
or is it Charlie Sheen?
Yeah.
Okay. And so they're both sitting there on the bench, you know, and but this is George and the girl, and then so Elaine walks in to get the girl at the same time that Frank is coming in to get George, and Frank is ripping the girl, saying, "You know, did this hussy put you up to this?" And Elaine's defending her, and Frank goes, "You want a piece of me?" And so at the very end, you see them, they're both like, kind of like the end of one of those the first Rocky movie, and they both kind of freeze frame with them both taking a big swing at each other.
Yeah. Excellent. Classic.
That's the beauty of, I mean, there's so many different stories going on in 22 minutes. It's unbelievable.
Oh yeah. And they have this, and they always are able to like tie them all together by the end. And they're always these really different stories, but yeah, the writers got really good at that.
Yep. Okay, number seven.
Number seven. My number seven is also from season nine. We have a lot of season nine showing up a lot here. But this one's called The Betrayal. But it's probably better known as The Backward Show. I put this one on just because I think it was really so, it was so unique. I don't think there's ever been an episode on TV like it, where they basically the episode starts with the closing credits, and it shows all the characters just really pissed off at each other and angry with each other and kind of walking off, and then it works its way backwards through the whole show. So by the time you get to the end of the show, you got the opening credits and the opening theme and all that going on. But all through the show, it's always interspersed with these little titles, title slides that say, you know, one day earlier, 1 hour earlier, and it kind of shows everything that was leading up to like this big disaster that happened at the end. But one of the funniest moments is that, because by the time you're about 2/3 of the way through the show, you're getting used to this format where it's like, you know, one day earlier, 1 hour earlier. And then at one point you see Jerry says, he says, "Bless you." And Elaine says, "Thank you." And then the scene ends, and then you get then you see it says like 3 seconds earlier, and then Elaine sneezes. So it was just kind of like they were really kind of like taking fun at themselves for kind of even presenting that kind of an episode. So
yeah.
So I've always just really had a I found that episode to be really interesting.
Now that whole thing, wasn't that, was that Sue Ellen Mishki's wedding in India, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because well, Sue Ellen Mishki, she was also the one in when Elaine bought the golf clubs. That's why, you know. So, she's always been kind of like this nemesis of Elaine's. That she's been her nemesis for like a long, long time. And
Right,
it was her.
right.
She was getting married to some guy who was Indian, and so they had the wedding in India. And the thing that caused them all to kind of like fall out was somebody let slip that Elaine had once slept with the groom.
Yeah, I think
So that
Elaine went out of spite too.
yeah. So yeah, I mean, that one, just for just the uniqueness of it, definitely makes my top 10.
Okay, my number seven is called The Library,
Oh,
and
you're stealing
this,
thunder.
okay, good. This all revolves around Mr. Bookman, who is the library cop who Jerry gets a letter from the New York City Library saying that he never returned the Tropic of Cancer from 1971. And Jerry's pretty adamant that he did. So they go down to the library, him and Kramer, and they want to talk to whoever's in charge of that. And the librarian says, "Oh, that's Mr. Bookman." And they're going, and Kramer couldn't believe it. He goes, the library cop is named Mr. Bookman, and he thought that was the greatest thing ever. And I can't do justice to he wasn't you know, Bookman wasn't at the library, but he came to Jerry's apartment later,
Yep.
and he went out about a 3-minute speech, which is just beautiful. Google, Bookman Seinfeld speech, and it's well worth your time. But it's things like, I don't care about the length of your hair or whether you wear bell bottoms. But if you come into the New York City Public Library, you better be wearing shoes, buddy. That's all I'm telling you. And the way he spoke, his staccato speech and everything like that, it was great. And he thought that Jerry wasn't taking this serious, and nothing could be more serious to a Bookman than the library books.
Oh yeah. Well, this is something that I'll definitely be going into a lot more in our part two of this. But yeah, I love Lieutenant Bookman. And basically what he's doing through the whole thing, it's really a parody of Jack Webb from Dragnet. And what's really funny about that is that as he's going through this, Jerry standing opposite him can barely suppress his laughter.
Yes, that's
He,
true. Yep.
yeah, so
And
but
Bookman never breaks character. He is excellent.
no, and it was played the character actor Philip Baker Hall. He's been in a lot of different. You'll see him in a lot of different movies. He's a really good actor, and but I'm gonna hold
So
some more of my comments.
the other part of that, just to steal some more of your thunder, is
Yeah.
that George is pretty sure he saw their old gym teacher,
Oh yeah.
Mr. Heyman, laying out in front of the library as if he was homeless. And George feels bad because he's the one who got him fired. And the reason was that he
Daddy.
purposely always pronounced his name wrong and always called him Can't Stand You. And he was picking on him, and they gave him wedgies and stuff like that. And so finally George turned him in and he got fired. So now he feels bad about that. And then at the very end, we see the book Tropic of Cancer in the pile of Mr. Heyman's stuff. So all along Jerry hadn't returned it. And so he was wrong to be outraged.
That's bad when you're getting wedgies from your own gym teacher.
That is correct. Now that's a season three episode. That's like the first one we got from one of the early ones, so that's good. Okay, last one for this episode, number six. What do you got?
But as it turns out, I'm going to season three again, and this is one that we talked about a bit when we did our Seinfeld baseball lineup. This one is another two-parter, and it's The Boyfriend. The Boyfriend is the one that starred Keith Hernandez, you know, and the guys were really excited when they found that Keith Hernandez was going to their gym, you know, because he, you know, just a great ball player, and I think we referred to George as the chucker, you know, who's this chucker? Because I guess, because, you know, George obviously can't play basketball, and he's just, every time he gets the ball, he's chucking it up there. Has a couple other great moments, great lines that they're really very memorable. One of them is when George thinks that Jerry is kind of like starting to get too into Keith Hernandez, like they're becoming almost like his boyfriend. And he said, what, you're helping him move? Pretty soon you're going to be driving him to the airport. I said, I'm not driving him to the airport, which is one of my favorite Seinfeld lines. And another great line is that Keith Hernandez starts dating Elaine, and toward the end, you know, they're flirting at the bar, and you know, he says, "Well, you know, I did win, I won like 9 gold gloves, you know, first base." And she said, "Oh yeah, big deal, first base. Everyone knows they put the worst player at first base. That's where they put me, and I was bad." And he said, "Well, I think I know a little bit about getting to first base." She says, "I don't think you're getting to first base. Oh, the way yep. I see it, I've been to first base and I'm rounding second. And I think so then Elaine says, "Well, you better check the third base coach because I don't think he's waving you in." So, the waving you in line is another one of my favorites.
Well, we'll be talking about that one again in our next episode, too.
Okay.
Okay, my number 6 is from season 4.
Okay.
And it's called The Outing.
Oh,
this is where the famous line, not that there's anything wrong with that.
It's beautiful.
Is born. It's all about anytime they would mention homosexuality or being a homosexual, they would immediately say, not there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I went through the script, and it looked like it was only said 6 times, although it seems like it was done a lot more than that.
It just seems like, yeah.
And how that works is, there, George and Elaine and Jerry were at the coffee shop, and there Jerry was waiting for this reporter from NYU to interview him, and they don't know what each other looks like. She's never seen him perform or anything. And so they miss each other. Like, he goes to the payphone, leaves her a message, and then we see her go to the payphone and leave him a message. So at least the audience knows who's who. And then they're sitting there talking about, you know, ugliest world leaders. And this reporter is obviously sitting near them as she's overhearing their conversation. So Elaine notices that and says, oh, and she kind of whispers to him. So, oh, this could be fun. She's listening in our conversation.
Yeah.
So she says, well, just because you're gay doesn't mean, yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You should tell everybody and just open up like that. And Jerry is not enjoying this at all. And so you know, that's about how we do in the coffee shop. But then later, Jerry, the reporter comes to Jerry's apartment, and George is there. And when the reporter comes in, she immediately recognizes those two from the coffee shop and about how they were homosexuals.
Yeah.
But Jerry doesn't really catch on. And Jerry introduces George and says, is it okay if he's here? And she goes, oh yeah, I want to talk to him too. And talk to him too. So they're going on, and George says, you know, they're going out like a married couple. Says, Jerry, did you watch this pair? And Jerry says, of course I did.
Yep.
He goes, oh, even sometimes you don't do it. And then George asks the reporter an opinion on the shirt he was wearing. And she goes, well, it looks okay to me. He goes, well, Jerry didn't like it. Jerry didn't like my shirt. So she's getting all these, you know, flashes that they're gay.
Yep.
And not that there's anything wrong with that. And so they finally convince her that they're not, they're not gay, and Jerry gets a brand new two-line phone for his birthday.
Yeah.
And he's talking on it, and there's nothing wrong with it. And the person on the other line can hear what you're saying to the other person. So he's talking to the NYU reporter. They're going to have a new interview. She's not going to publish that. And then George calls in, and Jerry said, while the other girl's on hold, and Jerry says, well, I guess we fooled her. She yeah. doesn't think we're homosexuals. And he's being real sarcastic about it. But so then Kramer calls in, and George is repeating everything that he is saying to Kramer. So they knew that they're in trouble, that the phone was faulty. And so again, now the article is picked up by AP, and people are pointing at Jerry and George, and they say, what are you pointing at me for? And it's in like the New York Post. They picked it up, and Jerry has to, and then Jerry's mom calls, and then George realizes that his mom's going to call, and it's just a whole big, whole big debacle for them. And they Jerry even dates her for a little short time, and Kramer comes in after that and says, let's go take a steam. You know, other things that would make you think maybe they're gay. Like, because I don't want to sit there naked all by myself. And so that was, and that's a long explanation, but that was where, not that there's anything wrong with that, came from.
Well, there's a couple spots in there, I think, where, when they're having that initial conversation, and George kind of turns to the reporter and says, do you see the way he talks to me? And she says, oh, you should see the way my boyfriend talks to me. And it was like when she said that, George is oblivious, but Jerry kind of like gets this weird look on his face. Like, what do you mean your boyfriend talks to you? What? And it just kind of started to dawn on him. And one of the things that I always laugh about when he's talking to his parents is that his dad says, his dad is like chiding his mother, saying, it was those culottes you made him wear. Says, Jerry, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, and then they're always saying, and like Jerry says it, because people often mistake me for gay because I'm thin, neat, and single.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of a big topic there too. And I think that happened a lot to Jerry in real life.
Well, and Kramer's the one that kind of pointed out, well, of course, Jerry, look, you're young, you're single, you're neat, or you're thin, young, and single. And he turned, looked at Kramer and said, yeah, so are you.
Right. And then Kramer was all creeped out.
Yeah, Kramer did one of his classic double takes. But outing, that was on my honorable mention list, and it made my first cut. It just didn't make the top 10, but that's the thing with this list. There are so many good shows that it narrowing it down to a top 10 was nearly impossible.
Absolutely. So I guess I got a few nuggets I can talk about, and then we'll do our top five. You stole a few of mine, but there's a few things we can talk about. One piece of trivia I looked up is that Kramer came through Jerry's door 380 times.
Wow. Out of what, 180 episodes?
Yeah.
That's wow.
And I remember I've got the box set to Seinfeld, and if you turned on like the notes, it would count them for you every time, which number time that was for Kramer coming through the door.
Oh wow, that's kinda cool.
Yep. Okay, my man. So that is the 6 through 10 of Seinfeld. And we're into about 45 minutes, so it's a good thing we weren't trying to get all 10 of them in.
Yeah.
And
well, and I like
top five is going to be super.
Well, and I'm glad that we did it this way because I think we clearly both love the show, and I think gave us a lot of opportunity to really kind of give a lot of love to our favorite Seinfeld episodes.
Correct. So we'll let this settle for a couple of days, and then we will we'll return with part one or part two, which will be 1 through 5.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, George, take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right. See you later.
Okay, bye.